Good morning. It's Monday, April 9th. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my guest co-host, Roger Goldman. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Renee. It is a total bluebird day here in Park City, which seems totally fitting because yesterday the ski resorts closed and today's a day when you could go out and hit the golf ball, although probably not as well as Jordan Spieth.
Or Patrick Reed, who won the Masters yesterday. I got to tell you, I just floated down 224 and into Old Town this morning. There is no one around. It's spring break for the Park City School District.
So not only could you go play golf, there'll be nobody there to compete with you, although the course isn't open yet. It is deadly quiet in Park City, and I think everyone's breathing the big exhale at the end of the, it's the combination of the end of the ski season and the spring break.
Yeah, a common theme you're hearing these days is the shoulder season is shrinking in Park City, that with more and more events and more people who come into the area, that quiet time that the locals really like after the ski season, it's kind of tough because it's muddy out there, so you can't get the mountain bike out. I'm sure Charlie Sturgis would have something to say about that. But, you know, it's quiet. It's kind of nice.
It is kind of nice. And as you say, it is really short. Some of the restaurants are closing for maybe a month from, you know, this weekend till just before Memorial Day. And it used to be they'd be closed a lot longer. But the good news is that, as my daughter likes to point out, it's the beginning of coupon season here in Park City when, once again, we can get two for ones, the only way to dine.
Yeah, that is a positive about the shoulder season for sure. And one place that is not closed, in fact, that just opened is Lucky One's Coffee. It's at the Park City Library. We're going to talk to Katie Holyfield, and that's going to be at the end of this hour. Looking forward to that. First, though, we're going to talk to author Kathy Polakoff. She's the co-author of Fire Starters. We're going to hear what she means by fire starters. And then after that, we're going to talk to Andy Fletcher. He's the director of owned brands for Backcountry. They have some new products. They're launching their own outdoor gear line. Those are going to be three great interviews that we have coming up in the next hour. We'll start with Kathy Polakoff right after these messages.
This is Ann McCoyd with Chin McCoyd, Fleming Harris, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. We've loved and supported KPCW since opening day in the Memorial Building in 1980. Real estate's all about community, and KPCW is the source for Park City local news. Our local info is DeerValleyRealEstate.com.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits, from business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my guest co-host, Roger Goldman. We're very excited to have author Kathy Polakoff on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Kathy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. First, before we get started with the questions, can you please pronounce your last name? I want to make sure I get it right.
It's Polakoff. You were so, so close. I'm good. You can call me whatever you want.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for that. Thanks for starting our Monday with us. I really appreciate that. You have this new book out that you're actually a co-author of called Fire Starters, How Innovators, Instigators, and Initiators Can Inspire You to Ignite Your Own Life. What is a fire starter?
Well, you know, a fire starter was interesting when you were talking about some of the businesses in Park City that you just talked about. Many of those people I would suspect are fire starters. They're people who wanted to go off on their own and do something different and make something bigger. But I like to think of it as going beyond entrepreneurs. So you can have people in a company who just make things happen, or you can have a mom at home who takes on the school district for her kids. And there, if you think of people who join a movement, these are the people who start it.
And you divide fire starters into three categories: innovators, instigators, and initiators. What is the difference between those three?
So a innovator is somebody who creates something. An instigator is somebody who disrupts, stirs it up, and an initiator is someone who begins something. And all of people have most of those elements in them, but one's more dominant. I'm curious, what's yours? Are you an innovator, instigator, or initiator?
I would love to be an instigator, but I think I'm an initiator.
I actually am an initiator, too, and it was interesting because I thought of myself, and I'm an old child of the 60s, so I thought myself as an instigator or at least an innovator, but initiators are real important. They're the unsung heroes. They're the people who actually make things happen.
Roger, what are you?
They're the beginners.
Oh, I like to think I'm an instigator. I tend to be a disruptive force. Or at least I try to be. One of the many interesting things about this book, and by the way, this book is quite readable. I really enjoyed it. Was the way in which you talk about how fire starters are different than other people, and I believe there's a line in there to the extent that it's genetic, but not in the formal scientific term. It goes to the fundamental characteristics of these people. How would we sort of generalize a little bit about what makes a fire starter different than an extinguisher?
An extinguisher is somebody who takes out all the air in the room, okay? They're the ones who poo-poo an idea. They're the ones who say you can't do it. A fire starter, one of the common traits we found in fire starters is that they don't give up. They have a passion. They want it to make things happen. And they also, by the way, learn from their mistakes. So a fire starter is a person who puts action in place. And an extinguisher is somebody who tries to stop that action, I think is a good way of explaining it. I think we all have extinguishers in our lives, in our personal and professional lives, and we recognize them. But what's real important is that you get to choose and surround yourself with supporters. And we know those kind, too. There's those nurturers and other folks like that.
Early in the book, and I think this is helpful to sort of give some resonance to these concepts, you give examples of three fire starters that, just to give to put some meat on the bones, Elon Musk, Mother Teresa, and John Adams. Sort of an unlikely dinner combination if I've ever heard one. Can you sort of give a little bit about why each of those fits into the fire starter category?
Well, you know, I appreciate that you see the difference in those. Elon Musk is... he takes one idea, you think he's knocked it out of the park, and then all of a sudden he's going after another idea, right? I mean, I think he's in space now.
Very much so.
Stuff. I mean, it's crazy, you know? I mean, everything he builds on. Mother Teresa is really interesting to me because, you know, you have a person who is in a very traditional non-fire-starting environment, which can be formal religion. And she just rebelled. I mean, she was an instigator. So her passion was to make things happen among the poor, to take care of the poor, and she wasn't going to let anything stay in her way. And she just accomplished more in her life, which is why she eventually got sainthood. And that, I mean, a remarkable woman in that. And, you know, John Adams was one of those more quiet ones, right? I mean, he was an initiator. You know, a lot of people didn't sort of think of him. And I think we often have presidents like that who are the quiet folks who make things happen. Another one comes to mind is Jimmy Carter, is one of those also. What really intrigued me, though, the book... profiles about 40 different people, and I loved the everyday fire starter. You know, I mean, we went after some people who everybody knows. Noah Galloway from Dancing in the Stars, John Sculley, who is CEO of Apple, some really big names. But there were the stories that moved me and actually gave me a phenomenal amount of hope in the world were, you know, Maya Penn, who had started her company when she was 8. She's 17 now. She has 2 million TEDx views, but she had a passion for environmental clothing. There's a woman out in Phoenix by the name of Jerry Uberle. By the way, Jerry's, I think, maybe 80 right now. She started the World Academy for the Future of Women. I mean, who on earth does it? She was a former speech pathologist. She goes to China over 100 times and, you know, starts working with women, and now she just, you know, at 80, she started this in Nepal. You know, those are the people who just sort of blew my mind. They're amazing folks.
So you write about people who have a range of impacts, right, from micro to macro, if you will. And when you, I should just say, some of these are well-known and some of these are not. I suppose one of the dangers of starting a fire is that somehow it can get out of control. And what came to me this morning as I was reading the book was Mark Zuckerberg, a guy who was a sophomore in his college dorm room. He creates this incredible, incredible network that seems to have burned out of his control at the moment and is now threatening to burn him up. Do you see that phenomenon in other examples where you see, you know, fire starters who've created things that sort of get beyond their control?
Yeah, and actually we saw that as a good thing. So we call that emissions. When an idea just takes on a form of its own. So, you know, I don't know about you, but Facebook's changed my life. It's changed how I interact with people. It's putting me in amazing connection with people. Or, I mean, who would have known apps? You know, I mean, now, and look at how many companies have formed off of apps from Apple. I mean, Apple didn't own it. They didn't try to control it. They let it out into the world. So I think you see that with technology, but I also think you see it with movements. I mean, look what's going on right now with the Me Too movement, right? I mean, you could look at it as out of control, or you could look at it as building just this amazing new way of looking at things that we should have been doing for a long time. So I think emissions is like the ultimate honor for a fire starter when things actually do get out of control.
One of the interesting things about the book was the way that you sort of characterize fire starters as people who derive a substantial personal reward from being able to crystallize their achievements. There was one line in the book that I like so much I wrote down. They practice a high degree of control over their thoughts and actions and freely choose endeavors that allow them to capitalize on the type of effort that is most personally rewarding.
Thank you for raising that one. You had made the comment before about, is it genetic? And one of the things that we did is we looked at a lot of research. So Paul Eder is a psychologist, one of my co-authors, and organizational sociologist and an expert in that area. He really looked at a lot of different research. And one of the things that Paul really helped us see, because we worked as a team on this for about 3 years, he helped us see the connection between environment and personality. So, you know, fire starters don't exist in a vacuum. They exist with the situation around them. And in order to do that, they're selective about where their passion's going to go and where they're going to drive something. So it's not just that you wake up one day and say, oh, I'm a fire starter. Mm-hmm. You have to have all the things around you to make it happen. And it's really a combination of situation, environment, et cetera. We put all that in a context called the fire starter framework because, you know, it did get complex. By the way, I was really glad to hear that you found the book digestible and easy to read because we wanted to create something that people could get like doable things out of, you know, where they could sort of spark their inner fire starter to make, you know, their lives better and make their communities better. So I'm glad that you found it easy to read.
And Kathy Rogers here nodding, and so am I, about this framework that you talked about. But before we get to that external framework that's important for a fire starter, I want to talk about the internal work. You talk about conquering the self and the importance of introspection. Why is that so important for a fire starter?
Fire starters need... So I think one of the things that we found out is that to be a fire starter is conscious. It's not random. So there need to really often sit there and look back at what they've done, where they want to go in the future, and practice that is a conscious practice. I sat down yesterday with a group of women, and And this is a peer group advisory meeting, and all these women, by the way, are fire starters. And we began the meeting with meditation. I mean, we had never done it that before, and it was just to get ourselves centered. And that so that sort of centering and introspection and looking within is just really, really critical. You can't move forward if you don't know what's inside of you, right?
Well, one of your questions under, and I love that at the end of the chapters, you have questions under the heading Spark Your Thinking. And one of the questions is, how often do you pay attention to why you do what you do in a truly introspective way? What kind of depth of thinking is required for a truly introspective way? Do you need, you mentioned meditation, but is this something somebody should do every day and be that conscious of what they're doing and why? Or is that something that once you decide what your intent is and you've gone through that introspection exercise, then you can act without having to delve that deeply every day?
I think you have to live your life in a purposeful way. And, you know, it's really, really easy for all of us to get caught up in the incidentals of life and the details of life and not actually be in the moment. So the people who I know who are most successful as fire starters and the people we interviewed are very purposeful. And to be purposeful, you have to be thinking about what you're doing. I don't think you spend your whole day on introspection. you would never get anything done. You know, you have to be active and doing action. But, I mean, how many times do we just run out and do stuff, and then afterwards we go, oh, why did I do that? As opposed to taking that few moments at the beginning of our day to organize it, to say, what is going to get me where I need to go? How can I be purposeful? How can I, you know, make things happen? And what steps do I need to do today to do that, right? I mean, we're either thinking, what do I need to do 10 years, or what did I need to do yesterday that I should have done?
Well, does a fire starter have a good short-term goal, like I'm going to get this done by the end of the day, and a good long-term goal? And then how does a good fire starter handle it when those goals don't come to fruition? How do they handle failure?
One of the most interesting parts we found is that all the fire starters failed, and they failed often big time. So there isn't a story in our book about someone who had 100% success. And by the way, sometimes I wouldn't even call it failure, but they came from many different walks of life. They had people who were really supportive of them as children and just horrific parents, you know, so that kind of stuff. But what the fire starter did, and we call it a term called cognitive convergence, and what they do is they are constantly building on their failures and successes. You know, so it's this, if they fail, they move ahead, but they're looking at what they did. So, you know, what is that expression? You fool me once, fool me twice. Mm-hmm. You know, they're more aware of the places where they may have made a mistake or the situational aspect of it, but they also move on with hope and optimism. So it's not that you learn from your mistakes and then you shy away from ever doing stuff again, but you learn from your mistakes and then you go, I'm gonna move forward. I don't think it's very unlike how children learn, right? I mean, they make, you know, a kid who learns how to walk falls down all the time. Can you imagine if that kid one day sat down and says, you know, I've fallen down too much. I think I'm just gonna like sit here and not move, you know?
I've known kids like that. Let me ask you a question about the framework. We touched on it a little bit, but there's you sort of break the sort of framework into three kinds of elements that contribute to a fire, if you will: igniters, fuels, and accelerants. What do those mean, and how do those play into this concept?
So igniter is what starts the fire, and we're looking at different elements, which are what we're calling really situational motivators. So those are things like talent, having a mastery mindset, having a driving passion, It goes to that global introspection idea that we were talking about before, and that's things that are really going to spark your fire, spark your idea. We then move into fuel. So how do you then move forward with something? How do you keep it going? And again, you know, we've probably taken this Firestarter's analogy to the nth degree, but, you know, the terminology worked well for us. But fuels are more environmental, and there are things like wealth. You know, if you have money or access to money or able to get money or can figure out it, and this happens to entrepreneurs all the time, it's a fuel that can drive your business. But guess what? Luck is also one of them. And also your connections you have. So those are more things in the environment. And then the accelerants are things that make it move forward. You know, so that's a lot of people get stuck in an idea that sort of, I built this business or I made this change and now I'm done. Firestarters keep on, there's a forward movement. It's an accelerant. And those are really within the context. And those are things like how well you're able to collaborate with others, right? Because none of the Firestarters in our book did it by themselves, okay? They had a tribe around them. They had connections. They had collaboration that they actively built. Another accelerant is your ability to be focused on your mission. You know, there are companies that sort of go off track on their mission, and then they flounder. I actually live in Rochester, New York, and I've watched Kodak my whole lifetime as a company. Mm-hmm. And it was an extraordinary company. But to some extent, Kodak got a little defocused from their mission as they were accelerated. And their mission was always around images. You know, so they were not quite on top of it when the technology changed around images, because they were still making fuel, making film, you know, and film wasn't their mission. It was about pictures. That's what George Eastman had. One company that I think is incredibly focused on their mission and really successful is Disney. No matter what Disney does, it's all about, you know, bringing childhood memories to you, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if they do a movie. It doesn't matter if they do a theme park. But they know exactly who they are and what their brand is. And I think as individuals, we all have our own brand. So, you know, how are we going to take our mission forward on that? And we, you know, there were many of the Firestarters. Like there's one people who were an artist pair, a husband and wife artist pair, who live in Ireland, because we try to really do things outside of the U.S. also. And their mission on this farm in Ireland is just to, you know, provide a place for artists to thrive and be able to do this amazing kind of work. And they took a family farm and turned it into one of the cutting-edge artist retreats in the world right now because they have that passion. So those are a long answer to your question.
A buzzword we're hearing a lot these days is authenticity, but it sounds like what you're championing here is find what makes you unique, find what makes you passionate, follow that path. It's authenticity, isn't it?
I believe it is, yeah. I mean, I think authenticity also has to work with the market. It has to work with environmental factors. So again, it's not like I'm going to be me, and no matter what, I'm just going to be me. You know, you have to do it, again, within a context. But if you're not true to yourself, you know, you're not going to be able to maintain that spark. And in my own view, you're probably not going to be really happy. You know, you guys chose your profession because I assume it gives you a lot of joy, correct?
It sure does.
Absolutely.
And it's really competitive, and it's really hard what you do. but you knew where you wanted to go and where you wanted to take it. I mean, I became an entrepreneur at age 48. I did that because I wanted to chart my own destiny. I had a passion for, you know, some of the things I did and that. And my co-authors are the same way, even though we all work in very different kinds of environment. But every person we ended up talking to had that level of authenticity. I really love you using that word, because they were very real and they cared deeply about the impact that they were going to make on whether or not it was for it was always bigger than themselves. It was always bigger than themselves or their family. It was about the family of their community. It was really about what kind of legacy were they going to leave. So I would put legacy and authenticity together there.
I think that's a great note for us to end on. Kathy Palikoff, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. It was a real honor. And thank you for the really interesting question. This is the most intense interview I've had. Thank you, guys.
Well, it has been our pleasure. Thanks again. That was.
Take care.
It has to be intense to start a fire.
Kathy Palikoff, she is one of the authors of Fire Starters, How Innovators, Instigators, and Initiators Can Inspire You to Ignite Your Own Life. That was a great conversation. And we have two more wonderful guests to come. Coming up next, Andy Fletcher. He is with Backcountry. They've got some exciting things going on. They had a big news announcement last week. We'll hear more about that right after these messages.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW. We are a service-oriented community bank offering options for your personal or business needs. We're next to the movie theaters on Kearns Boulevard, 649-3369, or at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. And yes, we still have cookies on Friday.
Hello, I'm Bruce Bohm, a partner at the Park City office of Jones Waldo, and pleased to support programming like Mountain Money on KPCW. Jones Waldo continues to grow through tackling our clients' challenges head-on and finding solutions to complex legal issues. More about us at joneswaldo.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Holiday, bike buyer for Jan, supporting KPCW. Jan's Bike Shop is open year-round for sales and service. We offer bikes from Trek, Scott, and Santa Cruz. Bike apparel from Gore, Bontrager, and Club Rod. Available at our flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or jans.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money here on KPCW. Joining us in studio right now, we have Andy Fletcher. He's the director of owned brands for Backcountry. Andy, you had a big announcement last week. Tell our listeners what's happening.
We did, yeah. So thanks for having me this morning. We announced that, you know, our new line, a spring and summer line for Backcountry brand. So we've never done, at least in the recent history, our own brand with the Backcountry label on it and with the Backcountry goat specifically on the product. So we've had a few internal brands, private label, as some other companies call it, but never our own with such a big launch. So we announced the fact that, you know, we had our own spring apparel starting now. It's available on our site. Also announced collaborations we have coming in the fall. So really pursuit technical-driven product for especially this fall is going to be Backcountry Touring. So
it's apparel and it's gear.
Exactly, yes.
So the goat is growing. Are we going to be seeing that goat logo on all of this?
Well, you'll be seeing it not just on people's bumpers anymore, hopefully on their jackets, their shirts. I'm wearing products here today. We'll be launching apparel now, and then the next few months, rolling launches. So we'll have some duffels coming out, mountain bike apparel coming in summer, and then in fall, we have our own apparel line. So we're doing the apparel, and then we're collaborating with a number of our brands and great vendor partners to do some actual technical gear, like skis, gloves, etc.
So when you say you're doing the apparel, I take it you're sort of lining up the manufacturer and setting up that whole network, which is quite a task, I would guess.
It's not a small task. Yes, we have a full-on design team. It's, you know, supply chain, everything involved. We get our apparel done everywhere from far off in Asia to LA. Some of our products are made right here in the USA. So it's not a small task. It's taken about 2 years in development. So when we turned 20, Backcountry's 22 years old. We decided, all right, we're going to go and we're going to do this and launch a brand. So.
So for 22 years, you've been selling other people's apparel, and I'm guessing the reason you made this big step is because you get a bigger cut of the pie.
That's definitely one of the reasons. You know, we make no bones about it. There's definitely a revenue play. But for, you know, those 22 years, we've been listening to customers, and our gearheads specifically have been doing, you know, learning about product, understanding what works, what doesn't. And so that brings us a lot of insights. And so it gives us a unique position to actually go and develop product on our own that, you know, we saw white space in the market that is from a, both a feature perspective, but also from modern fit. So when we talk about the apparel that we've launched this spring, a lot of it you'll see is more modern fit. It's things that we just couldn't get from some of our vendor partners in the industry.
In order for an operation like this to be effective from the consumer's perspective, they expect to be able to click and get it pretty quickly. So what are you doing about setting up inventory? Are you doing that here in Salt Lake? How's that? How's your back office work? I'm just curious.
Sure. So we have two distribution centers, one right here in Salt Lake, and then one is in Virginia, in Martinsville, Virginia. And, you know, those are exactly, yeah.
Next to my hometown,
people.
Yeah.
There you go.
Gosh.
The inventory gets in, it's separated out once we get it off the boat or, you know, shipped directly to us. But, you know, we have, you know, relatively quick shipping, you know, spend over 50, usually we have the, you know, 2-day shipping for free, spend over 50, that you, the promotion goes on pretty often. But it's, you know, like anything else on our site, readily available.
So you're stocking the same warehouses as your other gear?
Exactly.
Okay.
So, Andy, I want to explain to our listeners, since we're radio, not TV, what you're wearing, since you said you had some of the gear on.
I am.
It's a great green plaid shirt, long sleeve. How would you describe that collar?
It's more of a modern, smaller collar. Some of the brands, if you like, think about a Patagonia or North Face, any of the lifestyle apparel that they're creating, definitely more sort of traditional for the guy who's age 35 to 45. If you think about the brands who these guys are selling to, REI is huge, right? Mm-hmm. They make a lot of their product for REI. Mm-hmm. So REI's customer is slightly older. Our customer is actually a little bit younger than REI's on average. So we're trying to create product for a little bit younger customer, a little bit younger target, and definitely with more modern fit. So it's definitely not baggy. It's definitely not boxy cuts.
Yeah, it's a tighter fit. And I noticed that the shirt's not tucked in.
Not tucked in, no.
Which nobody's tucking in their shirt these days,
definitely
are they?
Not in the mountain town anyway.
So it's probably a little bit of a shorter
yep.
cut as well. And you've got the little goat right there at
the
end.
On the and on the back shoulder.
Oh, look at
on
that.
The yoke.
Oh, that's so, really subtle.
Yeah.
So it's kind of stitched in. It's a gray stitched in on this gray plaid. And you know what, Andy? I wouldn't have noticed that if you had not pointed
right.
it out.
We want these subtle touches for the customer. You know, discovery details we think are important. You know, makes it slightly different from, you know, anything else out there on the market.
So it's not like the big polo player on the front of the shirt or
definitely
the crocodile
no,
or alligator
no.
or whatever it is.
We definitely want to get credit for the goat, but we don't want to scream about it. So.
And then most of your customers, since they are younger, they're a little more socially conscious, and so they might ask things like, where was this made, and what are the ethics of your supply line?
Absolutely. So the products that we're making are either made in L.A., in China, or in Bangladesh. So, you know, we have a supply chain that's pretty robust. We are definitely working on making sure that this is, you know, a sustainable line as possible as we get started. Now, that's very difficult to do. We don't have the money behind us like a Patagonia to, you know, drive every part of our supply chain. However, when we go through fabric selections, we're very conscious about having blue sign fabrics available and using things that are more sustainable. So some of our down coats that are coming out in fall, 100% recycled fabric on the face of those jackets, so which we've done before in some of our other lines like Basin or Range.
So given that today is the quasi-official first day of spring because the ski resort's closed, let's talk a little bit as our minds turn to mountain biking about the kind of gear that you're going to be putting out in that space.
Sure. So we're going light mountain biking this year with jerseys and shorts. So basically it's a first take on it. Next year, so as we start thinking about, we focus on these pursuits that are really important to us. These are the activities that we live in and die for, especially here in the Wasatch. So we've got, you know, backcountry ski touring is here coming this fall. We'll do climb next spring, and then next summer we'll do a much bigger sort of enduro mountain biking kit, if you will. And we're doing collaborations with some partners in that space. So for this summer, you know, jerseys and shorts that are really well made, really tough, but also, you know, casual enough that you can, you know, come to town afterwards for a beer and not look like you just finished a race.
So. Will you do anything more gentle, or does this not fit the backcountry brand, like a golf or a yoga or anything along those lines?
You know, we're all about the freedom of expression, so if people want to use it for those things, we're absolutely open to that. However, definitely, I don't think golf is one of our pursuits. It's definitely not one of our fortes. We're going to try and stick to what our core activities are.
And last time you were here, you were launching Basin and Range, and we talked about the importance of social media and finding those influencers and how you were marketing more towards that realm. Does that hold true for this new line?
Definitely. And in backcountry, we have a fleet of ambassadors, basically, that we work with across the country as well as locally here. And we've been seeding them product and making sure that, you know, they're trying it out and getting their feedback on it. So not only, you know, our products, we've tested them with our gearhead. So a lot of our products, especially coming for fall, will speak to how it's gearhead certified. So those are our people internally that, you know, are testing it for us, giving us feedback. So we make it right. And then the influencers that we're working with outside of backcountry definitely have influence as well.
And if Renee's visual picture of what you're wearing isn't good enough for our listeners, where could they actually see some samples? Is it all on the website yet?
Most of it's on the website. So we're actually rolling out in the next couple weeks a few more products. But yeah, yes, our spring line is out on the website, backcountry.com. /backcountry.com or /backcountry. You can find it. It's actually right on the main page right now. So you can check it there. You can also go down to our warehouse store, both the store attached to the warehouse down in Salt Lake in West Valley.
There's no store up here?
There's not one in Park City as of yet.
As of yet, but you're looking.
We always,
that was a dangle.
we'll talk about more of that in 2019.
Oh, good
but
to
we
know.
We definitely want to have an experience up here for our customers.
Hey, Producer Bob, let's put that on the calendar for 2019. Call Andy, ask him about backcountry storefront here.
Andy, are you thinking about going into any kind of hard goods, any kind of gear, you know, branding your own gear?
We are branding our own gear from a camp perspective. So tents and sleeping bags and some camp chairs. It's light camping. We're not out there touting this is going to be, you know, the most ultra light or hardcore. But definitely for our customers, some of the things we've asked for, and we know that we sell relatively well, try and make some changes that our gearheads think are appropriate for those products, because we don't necessarily want to be just me too. We want to offer product that's distinct, unique. And really speaks to our brand.
And let's talk about price point. How do you compare to an REI?
The REI model, in my opinion, and this is not fact because I've never worked for REI, they're usually sort of take certain product that's in the market and then make it about 20% cheaper. We're not going after that model. Our pieces are pretty in line with what you'd find from some of our biggest brands like North Face, Patagonia. Not to the realm of Arc'teryx prices, I wouldn't say, but definitely reasonably priced for what they are. And when we get to the gear, they're comparable to other brands. So if you think about camp gear, it's comparable to Big Agnes, Marmot.
So what would you call the shirt that you're wearing right now?
So this is our long sleeve stretch woven. And it's, I think this one runs at $79.95 full price, which is pretty standard for what you get in the market for the material. It's 50% Tencel stretch fabric in it. So feels great.
Would you hike in that?
You could. Yeah. It's pretty lightweight. I would probably get a size larger than this one, to be honest. I grabbed this one as I was leaving the office today because I wanted to make sure you guys got to see some stuff. But yeah, a lot of these things are one of the things we made sure in all of our lifestyle apparel has to have either like wicking, breathability, stretch. There's all some performance aspect to each piece. The twill pants I'm wearing today have stretch in them as well. They also have articulated knees, so you could definitely hike in these. They're very comfortable, but they're also sort of work appropriate.
They're also part of the new line, the twill pants.
Yes, they are. Yeah, and there's security pocket on the side.
Yeah, they're gray. They have some neat pockets. I like that articulated knee with that seam, that stitching right around the knee that you see in most hiking pants. Yep. Trying to be descriptive here as we're scoping out Andy.
Check them out on our website.
What else do you want people to know about this new line?
Just that we're really excited about it and we want as much feedback as possible. We've gone light again this spring. We have like a 2.5 layer rain shell, but that's probably the most technical piece we've gone with this spring. But we love the feedback on gear from gearheads as well as our customers. So if you like the pieces, let us know.
And you're expanding. So does that mean you're hiring a lot more people?
We are. My team is hiring. I have two open spots on my team as we speak.
And what are those spots in case anybody's listening?
I have one for a product line manager and then one for an assistant brand merchandiser. And that assistant role is sort of a entry, either young kid right out of college or somebody looking for a change.
A real job here in Park City. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. Are you finding employment difficult? A lot of people we talk to these days say recruiting's hard.
It is kind of tough, especially for the kind of roles that I'm searching for. We don't have a huge retail slash manufacturing base here of apparel anyway in Utah. So I'm either competing with like the Kools or the Black Diamonds world for candidates, or Overstock.com. For this current role, the product line manager role, we've been, searching for like Nordstrom and some companies that are, in the West. There's plenty of companies in San Francisco and LA as well. But it's hard to get people for exactly what we need, I think. Backcountry is a great brand, but not everybody knows who we are. So sometimes we have to sell ourselves.
Well, Andy Fletcher, Director of Owned Brands for Backcountry, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
We'll have you back at least in a year, if not before. Any other big announcements coming down the pike this year?
We'll talk a lot more in the fall about our collaborations that we're launching with DPS Skis, Black Diamond, Smart Wool, and Flylo.
Well, let's make a date to have you back on then.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thanks, Andy.
We will be right back with Katie Holyfield from Lucky Ones Coffee.
Hi, this is Whitney Ryan from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Hi, this is Steve Roney, owner of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. I'm a proud resident of Park City and a loyal supporter of KPCW and all it does for our community. Our agents in Summit and Wasatch counties can be reached at any of our 30 offices or at our website, bhhsutah.com.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our next guest is Katie Holyfield of Lucky Ones Coffee. I was kind of hoping she was going to bring me a cup, but we're still really glad to have her here with us.
Yeah, where's the coffee, Katie?
I know, I had my caffeine dose today, so.
Lucky Ones Coffee is opened in the Park City Library in the space that used to be occupied by Park City Roasters, I believe. And tell us a little bit about what makes Lucky Ones unusual.
Yeah, so Lucky Ones Coffee, we just opened about 3 weeks ago, and we are a coffee shop that our main focus is employing and empowering individuals with disabilities. The coffee shop model is something that we've seen work in other countries or in other cities around the country. And it's just something really fun and unique, and I think the library is such a perfect spot for it. It's a community-based space, and somewhere it offers a lot more potential, and we want to create a space where people are proud of what they do.
And how many employees do you currently have?
Right now, we just hired one more, so we have 15 on staff right now. I believe 13 of those are in paid positions, and we have a couple people that are volunteering right now and are working their way in, are kind of feeling it out with SSDI and seeing how that'll work out for them.
And you opened up just a few weeks ago. How's it been going?
It's actually been going really well. Opening day was absolutely crazy. There was a line out the door.
You had a lot of community support.
Yeah, it was so exciting to see. And I was so proud of our staff. We, had been training for about 3 weeks. And there's only so much training you can do until it's kind of trial by fire. And they got that opening day, and they were amazing.
And with all that training that you did, is there something that's popped up in the last 3 weeks where you thought, man, how do you train for that? Never saw that coming.
One of the biggest challenges that we faced is change, giving change back. Mm. It's not something that I had thought about. So we actually went down to Howdy's ice cream that's in Salt Lake. And it's an ice cream shop that runs on the same model. And one thing that we noticed with their pricing is that it was rounded to the nearest dollar. So all of our pricing is tax included. And we round ours to the nearest quarter. But that's been really fun, too. It's been challenging but fun, so we work on it every morning. And, the other day, one of the boys, Cole, came up and showed me, and he set me down. He had all of his coins, and he was showing me that he now knows them all and knows, the amount that goes with each coin, which is heartwarming.
I think that, as Renee points out, I think there is a lot of community support. for this coffee shop, and we hope that continues. But you're a business person. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how this model is going to work for you guys to make some money.
Yeah. Right now, we've been really fortunate. The city itself is actually giving us a year of free rent. Just looking at the numbers that Park City Roasters had pulled in before, we needed to make quite a big change and get quite a few people in the door to start making money. And the other side of it is that we want to be able to have an impact in the community, and having just one person on at a time isn't really an impact. So setting it up that we can have at least two people on per shift, so that we are employing. We're employing a bigger number of people. But we've set it up so that right now we haven't taken a loss yet. And so it's been really good. We've had a lot of community support. Even when we were setting up to get ready and like building, people were coming up every single day asking us if we were open yet. So that was really a good thing to see before opening.
If we can just be real clear with our listeners, you're in the Park City Library area. And what are your hours?
8 to 5 Monday through Saturday.
Monday through Saturday, not on Sunday.
Yeah, we're closed on Sunday, and that just lets us start with about 40, I think it's like 48 hours during the week.
And how do you decide who to hire?
So we are employing a wide range of disabilities. There's a couple of different models where Biddy's and Bo's is the coffee shop in Wilmington, North Carolina, and this is where we created this idea from. They really focus on just intellectual and developmental disabilities. And coming from the National Ability Center, we have seen such a wide range of amazing people with, you know, different abilities. And we wanted to open it up. So we have an individual who is deaf that works for us. We have someone with cystic fibrosis. And it's just, there's, it's just anybody who's had struggles in the past of finding employment and finding somewhere that they really fit. And we wanted to be able to open that up and be able to hire anyone who is interested.
And that has to be a growing experience for the employees when you're working with a coworker who's deaf. That, and then I would think, has to inspire you to develop new skills in how you communicate with somebody.
Yeah, and the employee that's working for us who's deaf, she's wonderful. She can read lips. But she had some anxiety working the cash register because she was worried about customers coming up and not understanding, mm-hmm. and not, you know, being patient or giving her that time. But what we've found, and I always try to be very encouraging with her, is that, like, people do want to help, and people sometimes walk up and they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And once they realize, they're really good about, you know, squaring up, talking to her face to face so that she can read your lips and have the time. And have that independence.
How do you handle that customer who may not understand?
So far, we've been really blessed that people have been supportive, that we haven't had anyone coming in that, and I know that there was some concerns before we moved into the space of whether we were going to be able to really be a functioning coffee shop. And that was one of the things that we spent 3 weeks before we ever opened, really training and making sure that, you know, if you come in here, that you're getting a latte that is comparable to anywhere else around town and probably better.
Other than coffee, what else are you serving? Tell us a little bit about your product range.
Yeah, so we have pastries from a local lady named Beth with Bite Me Pastries. So we have muffins, gluten-free muffins, cookies, brownies. We just started kind of testing. She makes some empanadas. So she has a sweet potato black bean one that's really killer. We're serving Joffles, which is another local company. They're toaster pocket sandwiches. They pack a little more nutrients into their products. So protein-based, but something that's easy on the go. We have coffees, teas. We have a full-service espresso machine. We do cold brew. And then we have a lot of, we sent out a survey before we ever opened there's a preschool in the library, to parents to see what kind of snack foods and quick on-the-go foods as people are in and out of the library.
Well, that's
smart. We have some string cheese and applesauce and smaller things like that as well.
And what's your price point for a cup of coffee? I want to come in and do I have to say venti, grande, whatever? Or can I just say small, medium, or large with lucky ones?
Yeah, so we just have, right now we just have 12 or 16 ounces.
Great.
In most of our drinks. For some of the kids' drinks, we have like the mini size, the kid size. And it's comparable. We looked at all the menus around town. So for a drip cup of coffee, it starts at $2. And then for a large, it's $250. We're serving Hugo Coffee, which is locally roasted in Park City. Claudia's stepped in, and she's been a really great mentor. Once she kind of found out what we were trying to do and what we were pushing for here, she called us and just offered her services. She was like, I'd love to mentor you guys. And so she's been a really great help in the whole process.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. How did you get into this business?
I've worked at the National Ability Center for going on 4 years now. Currently, my title over there is the Camps and Community Coordinator. So I do a lot of the transition programming, and that's something that is really close to my heart. And what transition programming is taking adults out of high school and moving into adulthood and what that means. And so I run a couple of the programs over there, and we do cooking classes and a lot of like learning-based skills. And that's where my heart was. Taylor Matkins, the other half of this, she went to school in Wilmington, North Carolina, and had been to Biddy's and Bo's. And so she came up and told me this idea. And it's something that, you know, we started playing around with. We were like, why don't we have one in Park City? But, and we started going down into the Small Business Development Center and really developing in our idea, taking it back from, you know, we came in very hot that we wanted to do this idea. And so taking it back, we did surveys around town, and so really developed and got everything in order so that when the proposal came up for the library, we had the answers to all their questions.
What other business lines are you thinking about adding to sort of add additional revenue streams? Are you going to do any kind of catering for meetings at the library or any other kind of catering?
Yeah, we've actually been really fortunate. We've already been getting quite a few catering jobs. So we just did Thin Air when they were in town. We did one of their breakfasts, which was the biggest catering event we have done, which was 150 people. And it went off, and it was wonderful. We have also been talking with Becca, who is the one that rents the community rooms over at the library, about sending people our way that are interested in catering. Hmm. We're in-house. We can bring coffee up, any meetings that are there. We're absolutely open to all of that.
And what's your business plan? Where do you see Lucky Ones in the next 5 years or 10 years?
My goal would to be continue to grow. Biddy's and Bo's, what we were running off of, they started with about 14 employees, and they now have 40. Have grown. They've gotten a huge amount of community support. I would also really love to get into the bakery side of things.
You got 30 seconds left, Katie. Anything else you want to add that you want our listeners to know about Lucky Ones?
Oh, I think that they just need to come in and check it out. It's a place that I leave every day laughing and happy, and I think that's what we give our customers too.
And you can take your coffee into the library, can't you?
Yes, yes.
Love that. Katie Holyfield with Lucky Ones Coffee, located in the Park City Library. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Our newest residential project, Apex Residences, is a collection of 63 slope-side townhomes and flats located at the apex of Canyons Village at Park City Resort. Information about Apex Residences can be found online at apexparkcity.com or 435-429-APEX.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I want to thank Renee for letting me join her this morning, and I want to thank our sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Development with Verdian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
And I want to thank Roger Goldman for being my guest co-host today. Doug Wells, I think, is back next Monday. Want to thank our guest, Kathy Polakoff. She's the author of Firestarters. That was a great book. Andy Fletcher from Backcountry talking about their new apparel and gear line that's coming. The goat is growing, so keep an eye out for that. And Katie Holyfield from Lucky Ones Coffee. They are the new coffee shop at the Park City Library. And Roger, how do you say it? They employ people with disabilities?
Various disabilities.
Various mm-hmm. disabilities. And they just opened up a few weeks ago, and business sounds like it's going really well, and the community definitely supportive of this enterprise. We've got about 20 seconds left, Roger. Anything you want to add?
Let's see. I think as we look into spring, my guess is that we'll be hearing from more businesses that are changing what they're doing to market.
We look forward to that here on Mountain Money on KPCW Radio. NPR.